Well, second speaker, we have a gentleman who, well, I know we received help from one of the, from the same place. Without any further ado, I give you Thaddeus.
I love you. I'm Addict. My name's Thaddeus. First thing I want to do is thank God for letting me be here, and I want to thank Cheryl for giving a clear message. A clear message. You know, and we prayed before we did this. We went over in the corner and we prayed. Cheryl was nervous. I'm nervous. I don't think it matters how much time you have, how many times you do this, you know, and I think nervous is good because it shows that you're not overconfident, okay? And I'm always like that when I got to get up here and I got to talk about me, tell the truth about me. But thank God, one of the benefits of the program is when not only when you go to step meetings, but when you hear other people share their experience, strength, and hope on the steps. Because I've learned and found out through sponsorship, through this program, there is no right or wrong way to do step work. The key is to do it. And I'm glad to have people here who've been here before me that I have followed and listened to that have helped me on this journey. One of the things my sponsor told me, and I'll probably be mentioning my sponsor a lot throughout this because my sponsor has been a very important part of my recovery. I probably couldn't have gotten a lot of information that I have gotten if it wasn't for him. But one of the things that he told me when I got here, he said, Thaddeus, you're going to understand and recognize that when you stop using that you don't have a problem with drugs. Drugs is not what got you here. What got you here is your behavior. And what you're going to find out that one of your problems has been learning how to have healthy, wholesome relationships with people. And when I look at my story, I know that I never did really have healthy, wholesome relationships. And it had a lot to do with me. It had a lot to do with the guy with the esteem issues. It had a lot to do with the guy who had a lack of confidence. The guy who always wanted to be a part of, the guy who was a big people pleaser, that wanted you to like me, so I wore a lot of masks. And you know what? All of this went on before drugs even came into play. And it took me going through the step process to find this out. I remember when I did a fourth step with my sponsor after I came in here and I surrendered and I started building that relationship that he talked about in the beginning before I did my fourth step. He said, Thaddeus, what you need to do is start building a relationship with your higher power. Because you're going to find out through this journey, you're going to need God. So as I start building this relationship with him, because in the beginning he taught me how to pray. He said, one thing I want you to do every morning that you wake up, before you get up, I want you to hit your knees and thank God for waking you up. He said, because a lot of times you can just take that one thing for granted. That God didn't even have to blow breath in your body this morning. And at night when you come in, before you go to bed, I want you to get on your knees and I want you to thank him for guiding you through the day. So what he wanted me to do, he said, I want you to commit yourself to do this on a daily basis because he knew from the beginning I was a very inconsistent person. I'm the kind of person that would start stuff and not finish. That's why he had me call him every day. Whether something was going on, whether nothing was going on. He said, because it's important we build this relationship. So I took his advice and I took the suggestion and I did it because I was so beaten when I got here. When people said, sit up the front, keep your mouth shut, I didn't buck. I sat up the front and kept my mouth shut because I didn't want to go back from where I came from. So when I went through that process and started building my foundation and I did a fourth step and I started going on the inside and trying to find out what was really going on with this guy who came from a real good family, this guy who had real good morals and values as a child growing up, this guy who had a lot of dreams and aspirations, wanted to make something of himself. Why would this guy just throw his life away and use? And what I found out, it was a lot that was going on with me. Something I'd often share about a young lady that I've been fortunate enough, and I hear somebody laughing because they know what I'm going to say, that I've been fortunate enough to meet on this journey. Her name is Cynthia Cooper. She's a part of my story. The little girl that used to sit in front of me, man, that I used to like. But the defect of fear wouldn't let me tell her that I liked her. So I went on to act out to make her like me. A little guy who was real, real scared. That's what came out. A guy who was so scared and put on a lot of masks, man, that I hurt a lot of people along the way with my defects. I recognize that now. I didn't understand that then. And when I started writing about these patterns that I had formed, at some point I shared it with my sponsor. And what happened in this relationship of sharing it, you know what, is so much freedom when you are able to expose yourself. He said, when you expose yourself, you take the hammer out of everybody else's hand. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm a guy who likes to wear a mask. I still want to sound good. I still want to look good. I still want you to like me. But this process of exposure, we're talking about freedom. That's what it talks about. That's what this program is, man. We got a message of hope, and the promise is freedom. That if I come up here and I get honest and I start talking about what's really going on, and we're talking about the exact nature of my wrongs, not my rights. So when I started to do this and share this with my sponsor, he started writing down this list because, unbeknownst to me, he was picking out certain defects that I had been acting on for so long. And he said, Thaddeus, now you need to understand this. It's been a pattern that you had formed long before drugs. And what I found out for this addict, what had happened to me, when I stopped using drugs, the old person showed up. I'm talking about coming in the rooms. The drugs was gone, but the real Thaddeus was here. I'm talking about getting in relationship, not one, two, three, but getting in three relationships at the same time. I'm talking about inflicting harm because self was in the way. God was nowhere in that. And these are the things that I had to write about. So he said, Thaddeus, what's going to happen if you don't break the patterns you're going to use again? That's what the fifth step is talking about, breaking the patterns. It's talking about changing, doing something different. Because when he started giving me these defects of character that I had, that had been overwhelming me, he said, now we're talking about coming entirely ready to have God work with you, becoming entirely ready to have them removed. Okay? And I understood it was a process because my sponsor had me labor in step 6 and step 7 for a long time. I didn't understand it why then, but I understand it now. Because in coming entirely ready was a process. Because the reality, I understand and recognize every time I would pray to God and ask him to help me in an area, it would seem like he would help me. And the help would come in a way that I didn't even understand it was coming. Every time I would ask him to help me with an issue, I would be placed in a situation when I had the opportunity to either go left or go right. Because the willingness that had to come along with this step is something that I had to pray for, the willingness to get better. So step 6 was actually basically the preparation for step 7. Now I'm talking about God humbly asking him to remove what was blocking me from the grace. And every time I act out on a defect, I'm blocking myself from the grace. So I'm talking about, man, not acting on my emotions and my feelings, but thinking things all the way through. What happened to me in this process, after laboring in 6 and 7, what I found out about this addict is that when I first got here, the self-centeredness, my prayer life, how my prayer life had changed over the process of being here for a while. And I'm talking about the self-centered prayers that I would pray in the beginning. Everything I wanted was me. God, can you help me with this? God, can you do this? But as I proceeded along this journey, what started to happen, my prayer life started to change. Because now I'm learning how to pray for other people. So we're talking about going from self-centered to God-centered. Even people that harmed me or people that I thought did me wrong. So now I'm talking about getting in a posture where I can be humble enough to start writing my list. One of the things that I often share about that is the second step. One of the things the second step says, I think, and how it works is when I think of myself less, I start loving myself more. And what I understand and recognize that to be is that everything has always been about me. Now I need to start considering other people. Because along this journey, I had harmed so many people. And I can never, ever, 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 ever repay all the damage that I've done to society. But I know freedom is not free. Because all that damage I've done is a price that has to be paid. So we try to do the best that we can. So in my process of making a list, because now I'm talking about going back to my fourth step, going back praying and asking God to help me put all of these names on this list to people that I've damaged or harmed, not only outside of the rooms, but inside of the rooms. And at some point, becoming willing. So every name that I put on the list, I had to put the harm done. And what did I thought the amends was going to be made? Because my sponsor and I, we went over each name, because some names we removed from the list. Because I remember I had a guy on the list. When he told me to write every name, I remember I had guys that I had packages I had run off with. And I really thought that I needed to make amends to these guys, because we're talking about all harm. But he helped me with that. He said, Thaddeus, these guys you don't need to make amends to. What you need to do is pray for them. What you need to do is not sell drugs anymore. That's probably the best amends that you can do, because part of the ninth step says, except when to do so would injure them others. It wouldn't hurt. It wouldn't help any to go try to find guys that you sold drugs for. So what I did, I made my list, and I prayed on it. I went over each name. And the willingness was the hardest part, because as I was making the list, it was times that I was thinking about step nine. How is my amends going to be accepted? So I had to put myself in a position, in a posture, that I could let God use me. Because I understand he would say, Thaddeus, that when the amends is time to be made, God will set up the situation for you to make the amends. All you have to do is be willing. So when the amends is time for the amends to happen, you can do it. I had a financial amends, all the stores that I had taken from, and I knew there was no way possible that I could repay Giant and CVS and People's Drugstore, you know. I mean, it was just impossible. So what I do today, like Cheryl said, when I go in stores, I don't steal. I don't pick up. I did that early on in the process when I first came in here. I used to go in stores because part of my fourth step, James, was that I was petty. I'm a petty thief. You know, take Jet magazines and Slim Jims. You know, it is. That's what came out in my fourth step. I'm very, very petty. And you know, in the third steps it said, for a time life was pleasurable. I remember early on, when you see where disease is so subtle, when you do something and get away with it, the disease is so subtle it's going to say, you see, you got away with it and you can do it again. And especially if you're doing it and not telling nobody, because me being a secret person, I don't really like to expose myself, because defects grow in the dark. And I'm talking about going in the store, picking up Slim Jims, suit and tie on, just putting them in my pocket and walking out the store, you know. And I hit a bottom, because one day they stopped me going out the store, okay. And you're talking about the humiliation. And every day I would go in the same store, and after a while going in stores, you gain a relationship with the cashiers. They see you every day and they speak to you, you know. And I felt so humiliated when the guard grabbed me and they took me to the back of the store. And the first thing I said, why are you grabbing me? He said, because you got something that belongs to us. And it's, you know, and he took me to the back. Thank God they didn't lock me up. So I had to hit that bottom to stop doing what I was doing. So I understand how in the sixth step it talks about sometimes we can find ourselves moving towards the defect instead of away from the defect. Because I don't care how long you've been here. I don't care how spiritual you are. I understand that you're human, Thaddeus. And sometimes if you're not connected the way that you're supposed to do, continue to do the basic things that got you to this point, you'll find yourself doing things contrary to the program. But what happens in this process, we build a conscience. Because, man, you know what? One thing I don't ever want to do, I don't ever want to hurt people intentionally anymore. I don't want to do that. And I know the harm that I have caused. Man, one of the greatest pleasures that I have, because unlike Cheryl, one of the persons, I did not put my name on the list, because by the time that I had gotten through this process, and again, it's no right or wrong, because the literature talks about other people. Some people put their names on the list and some people don't. It's no right or wrong way to do that. Because getting to that process, up to that point, I had started the process on trying to get my life back on track. So the first person that was on my list was my mother. Because this was a lady that I did irreparable harm to, because, again, I told you I was very petty. I would take from my mother because I knew my mother wasn't going to get me locked up. So I did a whole lot of harm, not only physical, but we're talking about mental anguish. We're talking about emotional harms. The nights that she stayed up all night long worrying about where I was at. The times that I said that I was going to show up for family outings and never would show up. Or either would show up high or would show up and have to leave early because I had to get on. So she was one of the first persons that I had to make amends to. Now the process, just to show you how this program works and show you how God works in this process, is that now my mother is elderly and I'm still blessed to have my mother. She's 85 years old. And it's a blessing to still have your mother in your life. So I understand what Cheryl is talking about. Because I don't know how I'm going to react if my mother leaves me. But I know up to this point that she has her son back. Because God has put me in a position that I can help my mother on a daily basis. And I'm talking about show up and help her. Not only financially, but help her emotionally. Because I think the greatest honor when my father died, before he closed his eyes, he said, you know what? I finally got my son back. And he closed his eyes. I wrote a letter. I had to make an indirect amends to him. I wrote a letter to my father. And I prayed on it. What did I do today? I do volunteer work. And that's one of my amends that I make for the society harm that I've done. I mentor children. That's another amends that I make. Also, with the financial piece, before I got to the eighth step, it was when I first got clean and went through the process of going through treatment and getting in transition or getting in an SRO, when I first got a job and my Social Security number got back in the system and I had a very therapeutic job, I would come home every day and open the mailbox and there was bills in the mailbox from wreckage of my past. But because I wasn't making that much money, I would take the bills and throw them in the drawer. And I told my sponsor about it. He said, why are you throwing the bills in the drawer? I said, because, man, I can't pay, man. He said, what kind of bills? I said, man, it's RS and student loans. He said, how much your RS? I said, oh, I'm $25,000. Now, I got a little therapeutic job. I don't make that much. How much your student loans? Well, I owe $1,000, $3,000. He said, what that is? He said, understand this. He say, either you pay now or you pay later. And if you pay later, you're going to pay greater. So you need to challenge that fear that's holding you back and go down there and set up a payment plan with these people in spite of what you're feeling. Okay? You need to have faith in this God that you've been building a relationship with and know that he's going to get you through it in spite of. Because that's your problem. You always let your feelings dictate your behavior. Okay? Now we're talking about, man, we're talking about challenging that fear. Because what? I told you fear is a normal human trait. It becomes a defect when it paralyzes you. So I had to move forward and go set up a payment plan. And look, when you set up a payment plan, don't tell them people you're going to give them no $200 a month. You can't give them $200. Tell them you're going to give them $20. Now, they might not want it, but I bet you they're not going to turn it down. And what I want you to do is learn how to be consistent and pay it. Now, we're talking about the men's process because, like Cheryl said, the men's process is not understanding and saying that I'm sorry, but recognizing the harm I've done and not repeating it no more. So one day when you get out of debt, Thaddeus, you don't get right back into debt. We're talking about the men's process is an ongoing process because along this way, along this journey, it's going to be times you're not going to want to pay. But once you lock yourself in, pay them because you need to be consistent. So that's what I did. And when you get a little more money, send them a little more money. Then I shared about it. I went in the rooms and shared about it, man. And then see how, I'm going to show you how God is. This is the importance of going to meetings and having an open mind and kind of listening to people. Because once I shared my struggle with the IRS, my struggle with the student loans, what God did, God sent me somebody in the meeting one day. And he had shared about, he had come in this program and he was in debt for $250,000. Made my little $25,000 seem like nothing. I said, good God almighty. But he said because he came in this program and gave himself a chance to stop using and took the suggestions, he found out that IRS has a program that they don't even tell a lot of people about. Okay? people who haven't paid their taxes, people who are delinquent with their taxes. And if you can call the IRS and get into this program and show them why you didn't pay your taxes, it was a chance that the rate that they would accept you and the bill would be cut in half. So I was very, very curious, and I asked him about it. And he told me, and I called the IRS, and the program was called Offer of Compromise. They got a whole section in the IRS called Offer of Compromise. That's not something they publicize. You understand? But I never investigated. I never took, it was proactive. I was a reactive type of person. So I took the suggestion and did it and went down there, and they accepted me. And when they accepted me in the program, I had been paying them for a while. The first thing they said, okay, Mr. McCray, you showed us why you haven't been paying your debt. Because he said, well, what should I tell him? He said, just tell him your story. Tell him you've been using drugs. So, you know, government, they don't care. They want their money. I told them. I told them all the debts I had. So they said, well, what are we going to do? We're going to accept you in the program. And if you can pay us 10% of what you owe, the debt is wiped clear. $2,500. So today, going on 13 years later, I get a check every year from the IRS. You can't tell me this program that good. So, but I had to be part of the process, the amends process. And thank God for sponsorship. I had an uncle in this process, an uncle that I had stolen a lot from in my active addiction. And that I love very, very much. And God has a sense of humor, because when my aunt died, his wife, my sister and I was the only ones that was left to take care of him, because he had sugar and they cut off one leg. Then they wind up cutting off the second leg. And my uncle was very angry, very angry. I would get off from work and I would go over there in the evening and help change him and help fix dinner for him. And he had no gratitude. And it was a lot of times I didn't want to do it, but I was saying, I was told, keep doing it in spite of what you're feeling, because it's the right thing to do. Okay? And it was a whole lot of time when he would talk to me real raw, because this was an uncle that I had stolen a watch from. And my grand sponsor helped me with this too. Because one thing the ninth and eighth step does, or did for this addict, was help me release a lot of shame, a lot of guilt, and a lot of remorse that I had been carrying for a long period of time. Because in the beginning, when I would go to my mother's house, I couldn't even stay in my mother's presence for 10 minutes. Because that shame was eating me up. So my sponsor says, it's time to write. It's time to ask for forgiveness. It's time to participate in the process. So when I would go to his house, I was doing everything for him, but I was still feeling this emptiness. And what it was, we're talking about now the three R's that the ninth step talks about. Restoration, restitution, and resolution. I had taken this man's watch, but I told you I was petty. I told you I'm tight. My four steps said that. But that is, you got to replace that watch. You got to replace that watch. And I'm going to show you how God is, because I prayed on it, and I don't know what happened, but one day I was on Connecticut Avenue. I had gone down Connecticut Avenue. I forgot what I was, and I came past a jewelry store that's no longer in business today, and I walked past, and I saw a watch sitting in the window. It was the same kind of pocket watch my uncle had, but the price was much more than what he paid for it. You know, and this man, I'm telling you. You know, but see, you know, now we're talking about when God's going to set it up. So that is when God set up the men's, you just have to move forward. Now you're working every day, you know. But man, I'm telling you, that was the hardest thing that I had to do. That was a lot of money, but I did it. And I'm going to show you, because my ninth step was a very emotional. It was very, very emotional. And I went on my uncle's house. And he had went to the bathroom, and I had to watch, and I would say, God, please, I don't know what to do. And if God just put it on my spirit, just put the watch on the nightstand. I laid the watch on the nightstand, and I remember I was over in the corner. I was doing something with his clothes, and he came out the bathroom, and he sat on the side of the bed, put his crutches down, and he looked over at the, and he picked it up, and he started crying. And I looked over and I started crying. And no words even had to be said. Okay? So I moved forward in spite of what I was feeling. Because this was the same man. This was the same man who a week before that And I have shared this story many times. I would go over his house when I would get off from work at night and help prepare him dinner. And one night I had went to a party. I went to a cookout over my sponsor's house. It was somebody's house, and he had these spare ribs, man. These beef spare ribs. And, man, look, I have so many spare ribs. I ate spare ribs and potato salad. So what I did, man, I said, well, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to put these spare ribs over in my uncle's refrigerator. So when I get off from work tomorrow night, I'm going to eat some spare ribs and potato salad. Now, you know, because my uncle can't eat spare ribs. Because he's a diabetic. He's not supposed to eat spicy food. So I go to work. And you know what, man? I can remember when I was using, I would go to bed with a wake-up shot in the morning, and I couldn't even sleep because the dope be calling me. These spare ribs, I'm at work, 12 o'clock at work. I said, man, when I get over my office tonight, I'm going to get some spare ribs. I mean, I get there, man, and I swear, man, my taste buds, boy, was just, boy, thirsting for some spare ribs. I got the open ice box, and it was still there, because I had put them in a Kentucky Fried Chicken box. I said, my man, I took the box out and put it in the microwave, heated the joint up, and the potato salad was still there. I ate the potato salad, man, I'm sitting there, and when the microwave went ding, took the spare ribs out and opened the box up, and it was bones. And I was angry. My defect kicked up. So I went upstairs to my uncle, because nobody's in his house but him. So I said, no, he didn't eat my spare ribs. So I went upstairs. I said, Uncle Wynn, I said, you eat my spare ribs? No, I didn't eat your spare ribs. I don't eat spare ribs. And I was angry. Now I'm going to show you how, because at that particular moment, I was so caught up. When we're talking about obsession, compulsion and obsession. Obsession is when your mind is locked and loaded on something and all you're thinking about is. Compulsion is when you do it one time and you can't stop. But because my mind was locked and loaded on these spare ribs, I got angry because I was obsessed and had to have them. So what I did, I said, yeah, you didn't eat them. I'm gone. And I left him. I left him in his feces. And I went home, all the way home, and I told my partner about it that night. And she said, you got to go back over there. Because I couldn't go to sleep, y'all. And I woke up. It was like 2:30 in the morning, and I got up and I went back over there. And he was still laying, because this was before he had gotten his artificial legs and his cane. And I apologized to him, and I changed him. I was so caught up on self. So the next week, to show you, he said, because he was angry at me, which he had every right to be. I'm talking about in harm now, inflicting harm. The next week, he said, I came over to town. He said, you know what? He said, the other day when you asked me about those spare ribs, he said, I told you no. He said, I ate your spare ribs. Right? I said, Uncle Wynn. I said, well, I said, why would you eat my spare ribs? He said, because you put them in my refrigerator. I said, okay. Okay. So he said, this is my house. You didn't tell me you was going to put your spare ribs in my refrigerator. I said, you're right, sir. You're right. So what I'm trying to say, even though participating in this process and trying to do the right thing every day, sometimes I fall short a lot of times. I have a daughter that I love very much. When I first got here, man, I used to share about my daughter in the meetings, because in the beginning our relationship was like this. And I thought when I got clean immediately my daughter was going to accept me back in her life. And my sponsor and people who had been here before me said it's going to be a process and you need to let her go. Because yes, you're her father, but you've never been her father. So why do you think because you're clean, all of a sudden she's going to accept you right back in her life? Because the reality, Thaddeus, you have to get all right that she might never accept you. And you got to be all right with that. You got to let her go through her process, because I can remember at my 7th year anniversary, she came up to me at my 7th year anniversary and hugged me, and she said, Daddy, I love you. This was the girl who told me, I hate you. You're not my father. You've never been there for me. She said, you know what? All the anniversaries I had come to is because my grandmother wanted me to come. She said, the reason I'm coming now is because I see that you are serious. So it took 7 years. It was God's time. It wasn't my time for her to come back. People said, Thaz, you need to start learning how to talk to her and stop talking at her. You need to learn that she's a grown woman. She has to go through her process. So over the years, me letting her go through her own process, our relationship has gotten a lot closer. It's not where I want it to be, but it's where it's supposed to be right now. Only because I surrendered. Only because I let her be where she at. I'm still the kind of guy that will maximize what you do to me and minimize what I do to you. That's who I am. If you do something to me, man, I'll make a mountain out of it. And I know that because, I mean, man, if you owe me some money, man, you better pay me back when I said you pay me back. But when I owe you some money, it's not a big thing. That's who I am. And I'm not in denial about it. I'm also so grateful to have participated in this program. I'm so grateful that God saw fit to have divine intervention. And I'm talking about mercy and grace. Something that I would hear people share about when they got here. And because I understand what mercy and what grace is. Grace being something given and not deserved. Mercy is justice held back. But God said, I'm going to give you another chance to get it right, Thaddeus. So my thank you to God is being a maximum service because I found out through this process that God didn't save me for me. God saved me to help somebody. God saved me to all the damage that I did on the Creator's creation was to try to do the best I can to live accordingly to principles. And sometimes you're going to fall short, Thaddeus. But you need to pick yourself up. You need to forgive yourself. Because if you want people to forgive you, you got to learn how to forgive yourself. I don't ever want to be part of the moment of silence again in my life. I don't ever want to be there. So I continue to participate. I sponsor people. I still go to meetings. I still have a home group. I still show up. And my life is great. Again, I would like to thank this committee for asking me to come up and share my experience, strength, and hope, and thank everybody. Turn it back over. Thank you. Thank you.